welcome to Spiritual Warfare. My name is Teresa.
And my name is Kay.
Today, we'll be reading from the book by Dr. David Jeremiah, Hope, Living Fearlessly in a Scary World. We are going to be talking about hope after failure. Ms. Kay, what is the Bible verse regarding that today?
The Bible verse is Deuteronomy 31:8. The Lord, He is the one that goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed.
The Lord, He is the one who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. Do not fear nor be dismayed.
Lyndon Baines Johnson was ambitious from the start. He moved smoothly through the House of Representatives, was elected to the Senate, and then became the Senate's majority leader. Still, his eyes never left one address. 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the White House.
He was a tall Texan, 6'4", not to mention wealthy and influential. He had a reputation for getting things done, even if he had to cut a few corners along the way. By the end of a typical day, he had outworked and outmaneuvered everyone in the room. He wouldn't take no for an answer on anything, including his drive to be president of the United States.
In the 2 years leading up to the 1960 campaign, it seemed like his greatest dream lay within his grip. He was the highest-ranking Democrat in the nation and one of the most respected men in America. His opponent was considered a lightweight in politics, a skinny, sickly young man who, in Johnson's view, was little more than a playboy living on his father's money, John F. Kennedy.
Summoning advisors to his Texas ranch in 1958, Johnson told them plainly that it was his destiny to be president and that he was going to run for the office.
So the men around him began to lay the foundation for a campaign to put their man in the White House. Since the Republicans had held the presidency for 2 terms, the Democrats poured all they had into their leading light. The planners waited for Johnson's announcement that he would throw his 10-gallon hat in the ring.
Then they waited some more. Johnson, who had spoken of this dream for as long as anyone had known him, had cold feet. He was, according to the White House press secretary at the time, a man badly torn. Meanwhile, Kennedy was racing across the nation, sewing up delegates to win the nomination for himself. By the time Johnson got around to announcing his candidacy, it was too late. Kennedy had beaten him to the punch.
Historians have speculated why such a driven and powerful man stalled at the most important moment of his career. Biographer Robert A. Caro has a theory. He believes that for all his drive and bravado, Johnson was paralyzed by a fear of failure, the fear that he would end up like his father.
When Lyndon was a child, his family was among the most respected in town, living in a large house on a sprawling Texas ranch. His father, Samuel, was a successful man, a member of the state house, and the most prosperous businessman in the area. Sam brought the first car anyone had ever seen in those parts, and he had a chauffeur to drive it. The Johnson family was riding high.
But as young Lyndon came into his teenage years, disaster struck. The business failed. The family lost its ranch and moved into a little shanty house. The next step up from homelessness, from being the highest in society, the Johnsons plummeted to the lowest. Townspeople brought food to keep them from starving.
Wow.
Lyndon was humiliated beyond words. One classmate recalls that when Lyndon was taunted at school, he responded that one day he would be president of the United States. His classmates laughed and said they wouldn't vote for him. He retorted that he wouldn't need their votes.
From that moment, LBJ dreamed of being president. But when the prize was finally within his grasp, he was traumatized by a fear of failing in a way that would bring public humiliation, as had happened to his father. He was so afraid of defeat that it became a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Carroll writes, his father's fall had shown him that failure could mean not merely failure, but terror. The terror of living in a house that month by month you were afraid would be taken from you by the bank. That failure could mean not merely terror, but ruin, permanent ruin. The failure, defeat might be something from which you would never recover. The failure in public, failing in a way that was visible, having to move off your ranch, having your credit cut off at the stores, and you had to walk past every day. No longer holding your public office could mean a different but also terrible kind of pain, embarrassment, disgrace, and humiliation.
You know, it's funny when you said walking past the stores or credit at the stores, because back then it was so cool. Everybody just walked in those stores. It was always put on an account. They just got what they wanted, walked out, you know, paid their account. I just thought that was really cool, Watching the movies, how everyone shook hands and your word
was your word.
Your word was your word.
Yeah.
Okay. When you shook someone's hand and said, yes, it's a deal, that's all it took. Not today. According to Caro, that's why Johnson anguished and languished over his run for office. And that's why Kennedy beat him for the 1960 nomination, and history took the strange and twisted course that followed. He did eventually make it to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but it wasn't by a course he ever would have scripted out for himself.
Those who fear failure are paralyzed by the R word, risk. They undermine their own efforts without even realizing it as an attempt to escape the anxiety of looming failure. Have you known people like that? I have. Gifted people who might have done great things in life but wouldn't and couldn't because they were protecting themselves from disappointment.
Wow. Nearly all of us have felt the fear of failure at some point in our lives. In fact, many of the most admired people in the Bible experienced it. We see the consistently in the call narratives of the Bible. Those accounts in which God summons a person to a particular task. The more prominent examples are Moses, Gideon, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel.
I think of it as he called the least of these.
Yes.
You know, Moses stuttered. Each of them had something.
Thorn in their side.
The people that most of us wouldn't have thought about. I think that's really neat because that could be you.
That could
be me. That could be Teresa.
Mm-hmm. You don't need a degree when God calls you.
No, you don't.
You do not need a degree.
Not the most prominent people as society looks at them.
Yes.
Being prominent. Okay. It's different in God's eyes.
Yes.
In the Old Testament, these call narratives have a similar form and progression. First, there's an encounter with God, either directly or through one of his angels. This encounter occurs not in some sacred place, but within the normal routines of life. Moses is tending sheep. Gideon is threshing wheat. A divine encounter ensures, bringing a call and a challenge. Your moment has arrived. I am sending you on the mission of your life.
That is so cool. Ooh. That is what I'm waiting on. I truly am. The other day, Diana, I don't know who we were around, but I told her, I said, I'm getting my house in order. She's like, she thought I was dying or something. She said, why? I said, I don't know. I feel I need to get my house in order. I need to do something. I don't want to live out the rest of my life in where I am right now. Right. I just don't. And Diana said, you and I are so different. She said, I don't even think about those things. I just think, you know, go to work, come home. It's funny how we're all different. She has no desire. She's content where she's at, and that's how she wants to live the rest of her life. Not me. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I want to do something exciting. Anyway, Miss K, we're going to stop there, and I will see you next week. If you were to die today, where would you go?
It's your choice.